two things we are going to talk about today. One, some new developments in the Pegasus project story, the ongoing story. And today, the developments we are looking at are more international and with very important implications, at the center of which lies the tiny state of Israel. So we'll talk about that. Also, in the second half, we'll talk about the Olympics, because today is the opening of the Tokyo Olympics without a crowd, without cheering, etc. India has a sizable contingent of 126 participants, mind you, not officials, participants, 126 in 18 disciplines. And soon enough, there will be excitement. So we'll talk a bit about the Olympics and what to expect there also from Indian contingent. And also, what do we think about India's Olympic performance, which obviously has not been stellar ever. Now, first of all, the Pegasus project. So the new revelations that have come out, there are revelations in India about more activists being followed, about more politicians being followed, in Assam, Northeast, anti-CAA activists, etc. That is besides the point. Today, our focus is international, because what the latest revelations have thrown up, and this was a story in the Washington Post last night, and then everybody's picked it up, that this hacking has spared nobody. This involves three presidents. That includes the president of a P5 country, that is President Emmanuel Macron of France, Iraq's President Saleh, South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa. Now, these heads of states who must be getting such a strong protection from their own cybersecurity units have been, their phones have been breached as well. Although the reports I read tell us that Macron, although he carries two iPhones, but whenever it's something that is confidential or that he wants to keep secret, he only uses the encrypted classified lines of their own, that those are government lines, not his mobile phone lines. But think of Emmanuel Macron's phone having been infiltrated into. Now, who's done it? The suspicion generally is that Morocco get it done. Thereby lies an irony. Morocco, if Morocco got it done, then it's also true that Morocco's own prime minister's phone was also intruded into, and also the Moroccan king, King Mohammed VI. His phone was also under watch. So this was really everybody watching everybody between these big powers. Nobody was spared. Even the big power like France was not spared. So three presidents, I told you, three prime ministers. Imran Khan, next door. I told you that if Indian intelligence targeted him and got into his phone, all credit to him, they only should not have got caught. So Imran Khan, Egypt's Mustafa Madbouli, and Morocco's Saad Eddy Al Othmani. So these three serving prime ministers, besides these seven ex-prime ministers, they were all monitored, or they were all intruded into or surveilled when they were serving as prime ministers, not when they became ex-prime ministers. So Yemen's prime minister, that is Ahmed Obeid bin Dagur, and Lebanon's Saad Hariri, who we knew the Saudis had some issues with, as the Saudis had issues with Yemen. Uganda's prime minister then, Ruhakana Rugunda. France's prime minister, Edouard Philippe. Kazakhstan's then prime minister, Bakitzan Segintayev. Algeria's Nuruddin Bedoui. And Belgium, once again a European country, a NATO country, Belgium's Charles Michel. Once again, you can start guessing in terms of who might have been interesting. And if you know European politics and Middle Eastern politics and politics, say, of Africa, particularly Francophone Africa, then you know who's keeping tracks on whom. And this is, funnily, a situation where weaker powers are keeping track of leaders of bigger powers. I mean, forget some exceptions like Imran Khan, etc. But say, Morocco keeping an eye on Emmanuel Macron, or maybe either Morocco or any of the other African countries keeping an eye on the Prime Minister of Belgium. So this weapon has been used also as an equalizer in this battle for espionage by many of these countries. Now, who are the countries who are primarily known to have bought this software, besides India, of course. So there is Saudi Arabia, Hungary, Orbán's Hungary, Azerbaijan, UAE, Rwanda, Morocco, Mexico, Kazakhstan. Not exactly the company India wants to be in, but India is there. So I read a story in Haaretz newspaper of Israel. Haaretz is a very highly respectable liberal newspaper in Israel, a bit like Israel's Guardian. Maybe if I said it to an Israeli friend, they will say, oh, the Guardian is like the Haaretz of Britain. Nevertheless, Haaretz has a long story linking this sale of this equipment, this deadly military equipment. This is qualified as a super secret, very sensitive military weapon. They are linking it to one, Netanyahu's visits to several of these countries, or Netanyahu is improving Israel's relations with those countries. So you can put any spin that you want on it. One side of the ball, you can put the spin saying that he was doing it maybe to incentivize these countries to become his friends. On the other side, you could say that he was just doing it to earn more money for his country and his country's company, because every sale of Pegasus by NSO had to be authorized by the Israeli government. No other sales were possible. This is a very tightly regulated industry and very tightly regulated product according to international protocols. So one, the question arises that why was Israel okaying the sale of this equipment to all these countries who are known to undermine civil liberties, go after dissidents? I'm not even counting India there yet. That's the reason, in fact, I said that India has found itself in very bad company. So what rules were they following? So the government was clearing these sales. Again, Haaretz surmises that Netanyahu was using it to basically lubricate his own country's relationship with these countries and also to bring more money into the country. Now, he visited many of these countries. He visited Rwanda. He visited Hungary for the first time an Israeli leader got there. He came to India 2018. Before that, Narendra Modi had gone to Israel. He went to Mexico. He went to Kazakhstan. Now, these countries are very important for him. See Azerbaijan, for example. Why is Azerbaijan so important for Israel? Why is Israel being so helpful to Azerbaijan also in its war with Armenia? Because Azerbaijan is a country neighboring Iran, with which Israel has serious problems. Also, Azerbaijan has a relationship with Iran. So it's a way of keeping an eye on Iran, of having an in or having a window on Iran as well. Again, in the new list that comes out, some American names have come out. So American negotiator for the nuclear treaty with Iran, his number is also there. Who wanted to keep tabs on him? Were it the Saudis or were it the Israelis? We were told so far that NSO had said that they are hands off as far as American numbers is concerned. But in this case, looks like they were not. And if that is the case, they'll be held to pay in the American system, because the French system, they've already ordered an inquiry. The French judiciary moves very independently and very fast. And similarly, if this gets picked up in America, and if there is confirmation that many of these American numbers were also surveilled using this software, then there's going to be big trouble there. Now, you can see other countries. Morocco. Netanyahu didn't visit Morocco. I'm quoting from the Haaretz story. But the fact is that with Morocco, in his times, Israel improved its relationship and also said we are working in mutual interest. So Morocco obviously become a major buyer of this Pegasus, and also the government of Israel, after looking at all security considerations for themselves and overseas, also cleared it. Similarly, I read a very interesting incident from the same story. So in 2017, in fact, this Haaretz story quotes an incident, and it's quite a juicy incident, where NSO held a demonstration for Saudi officials. Now, this is when Israel and Saudi Arabia did not have any contact. So they went to Cyprus, a neutral country, not far away from Israel or from Saudi Arabia, and they held a demonstration. What was the demonstration like? So the story is that one NSO official told one of the Saudis to go out to a nearby mall and buy the latest model of iPhone, which he dutifully went out and did. Saudis, money doesn't mean anything. So he came back with an iPhone. Now the NSO official said, or the salesperson said, give me the phone number that you put on this phone. Just give me the phone number. As the phone number was given, immediately in minutes he showed that the phone number had been infiltrated by Pegasus without the person holding the phone doing anything. So this way NSO demonstrated its click-free ability to be able to infect phones. And this account says that those Saudi officials were completely in awe of the system and they went out to buy it. And also don't forget that January 2020, Netanyahu himself had made a semi-secret visit to Saudi Arabia, to a coastal town in Saudi Arabia. In fact, we had done an entire episode of Cut the Clutter based on that. And now we come to the Olympics. 126 Indians are going to be competing in the world's largest, most prestigious and the toughest sporting tournament. Now, I know what will happen. If we get one gold or maybe a couple of golds, there'll be celebration. We get a couple of silvers, couple of bronzes, there'll be some celebration, etc., etc. Nevertheless, people will go and say, it's inevitable that such a large country of 1.4 billion people, 1.38 billion people, we can't produce 10 medalists at the Olympics, we can't produce 15 medalists at the Olympic, we still finish way down in the medals tally behind tiny countries. So I want to put that in perspective, because you will see a lot of the disappointment as well. Hopefully we will see greatly an improvement and also medals. So the point I'm trying to make is that look at India's record. In 1952, K.D. Jadhav, the wrestler, he won India a bronze medal. Since then, India had not won any medal at the Olympics except in hockey until 1996 when a bronze was won. Now, even hockey, 1968, India broke its control over the gold medal, gold or silver. 1968, India got the bronze medal. 72, again at Munich, the bronze medal. And then India hasn't got any Olympic hockey medal yet except the gold in 1980 at Moscow Olympics, which suffered from a boycott by a lot of the countries because of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So really the two other powerful countries playing in that hockey league were Spain and the Soviet Union at that point. All the others, Pakistan, Australia, Germany, the Netherlands, New Zealand, they had all boycotted. So that was a limited Olympics, but India won a gold. Otherwise, India has not won a hockey medal as well. In 96, India won a bronze. After this, that India is winning a few medals every now and then. Athens, India got a silver. Rajyavardhan Singh, who's now in shooting, who's now a member of parliament for the BJP. But to think that this means that India's recorded sport is completely dismal and hopeless and there is no hope and we are the worst, that is not correct. Because what happens is that every time there is an Olympics, we set our hopes too high. Our hopes are for a medal. Now, getting an Olympic medal is a process. You can't train for 2 years and go and get an Olympic medal. It's absolutely the last step after a lifelong training. So in fact, after Beijing, I had written an article, National Interest, which I'll share with you, that said one gold, two bronze, and quite a few reasons to stop whining. That is the message I'm trying to give on the eve of this Olympics as well. Because where does India win medals? And where is it that Olympics matter for a country like India? Boxing, wrestling, contact sports, and athletics. Athletics, India has not been winning medals, but India has been making improvements. And then there is archery and there is shooting. That's where we got our lone individual gold in the history of the Olympics. Now, is India the second Asian power? Let me ask that question first. India is not. India is not the second Asian power. In fact, and if you look at your Asian records, so because we look at the, before we look at the Olympics, first of all, Asia is way behind the rest of the world. Leave China apart. right? But even then, the rest of the world standards are very high. Where does India stand in Asia's? So 2018 Asian Games in Jakarta, that is Indonesia, India had its highest ever medals tally in the Asian Games. India had 70 medals. Still, it put India behind China, Japan, South Korea, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan. India was about 7th or 8th always in Asian Games. So if you're 7th or 8th in Asian Games, it's tough to think that you should be in the top 10 or even top 25 at the Olympics. Look at the medals India won in the 2018 Asian Games, because that is our closest comparison to this World Olympics. 16 golds, fantastic. The best ever for India in Asian Games. 23 silver, 31 bronze. So 70 medals that India won in 2018 in Jakarta was India's highest ever medals tally in the Asian Games. Before that, 2010 Guangzhou was 64 with 14 golds, almost as good as 2018, but not quite as good. 2014 at Incheon in Korea, it was 11 golds, 10 silver, 36, so 57 overall. 2010 was 64 overall, and again 2006 was 53 overall. So what this tells you is that at the Asian level, India's standard has been rising. So to think that from this level, suddenly your athlete should now go and start beating the world and winning the Olympics is a very tall ask. At the same time, there is a big improvement, and that improvement has to be celebrated, because the gap between even qualifying for the Olympics and winning a medal is very high. Traditionally, say for athletics, swimming, to qualify at the Olympics, you had to better the number 6 position at the last Olympics. So, did you have any Indians who could have finished at, say, number 6 position at the last Olympics there? Now, that's why very few qualify, because for every sport, there are different qualifying criteria. So, the fact that you qualify for the Olympics is a big, big deal. Then there are sports like boxing, wrestling, athletics, archery, shooting, where India has become now the second Asian power. The next good news is, the next big bit of good news is that India's athletic records, which used to be the most durable in the world, are not so durable anymore. More and more of the old records in athletics are now being broken also in swimming. Similarly, at least 30 Indians at this point are among the top 10 in various disciplines. These disciplines are still the same, that is boxing, wrestling, shooting, archery, athletics, and now also badminton. So 30 in top 10 is very good. When you have 30 in top 10, you might think, oh, maybe 4 or 5 or 6 might win a medal. But imagine, if you want a larger medals tally, then you need something like 100 in the world's top 10 in various disciplines, and also maybe 30 in the top 6 in the various disciplines in the world. That is not where India is right now. That's why when we get disappointed that our athletes don't immediately go and win medals, I think we are asking for too much. The good news is that over the years, over the decades, India has narrowed the gap between itself and the rest in Asia. And that is a step forward. But at the same time, you cannot go zero to hero. So when you watch these performances, remember that. Remember where you are starting from. You might have improved greatly, but this will not suddenly bring you a rain shower of medals. Because, you know, also medals at the Olympics are a confusing thing, and I have mixed views on it. There are many sports at the Olympics, many disciplines, which we don't play in our normal lives. These are medal sports. Now, many of these medal sports are also designed for regimented societies. Now, look, in the past, for example, East Germany used to do so well at the Olympics. Soviet Union used to do so well at the Olympics. They no longer do that well. At Moscow, East Germany got 126 medals. But later, when Germany got together, East and West, they've never got even one third of that many medals. Does it mean that combined Germany is less powerful, less successful, less influential, should be less proud of itself than just East Germany was? That is because a regimented society can produce, literally clone medal winners. And I will give you an example. Look at the Chinese swimming sensation, Ye Shiwen. She was picked up as a prodigy at the age of 6. At the age of 6, talent scouts picked her up, and then she was almost like in sporting custody for the rest of her life until she began winning the medals at the Olympics. So can you imagine something like that happening in India? If somebody's 6-year-old kid is picked up by talent scouts, there will be TV discussion shows, the courts will get involved, there will be an outrage, it will be seen as a kidnapping. But regimented societies can do that. They can pick up 6-year-old, 7-year-old who they see having talent for something like gymnastics and then train like that, and then in those sports one sports person can win multiple medals. So these are also, there is a science to winning medals, but there is also politics to winning medals, and we know that authoritarian societies generally have been better in the past, and they identify their state's success and their own success with medal winning. So at the Express, when I was there, I had got a wonderful professor, Minxin Pei, who is a China expert. I'd got him to write a column headlined "Where Winning is Everything." And he talked about how the Chinese spend $3 billion at Athens for Olympics preparation, which means every medal that the Chinese won at the Athens Olympics cost them $50 million. Why did they do it? Because of national pride. And they continue to do so. That no longer is possible in most of the countries, and definitely is not possible in a country like India. So here is my wish for India. Besides what medals I get, I hope we hit gold this time, and I hope we get a healthy number of gold, silver, bronze. We've got very few Olympic medals through the history. I will give you the number. But my wish is that India should now reach a level where we have at least 50 performers, 50 players who feature in the top 10 of, India should have at least 50 performers, 50 sportspersons who feature at least in the top 10 of their respective disciplines. What will that do? That will then make us dream of 25 gold medals in Asian Games and maybe for the fourth position in Asian Games tally. That is after China, South Korea, and Japan. When we get there, then many of these sports persons will be closer to Olympic medals as well. Until then, it's a journey and it's a process. So enjoy the sport, keep the Olympic spirit intact.